Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation and the California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org.
This is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly look at the issues that matter to the residents of the San Joaquin Valley.
Hello, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition. A week from today, Fresno residents will make a decision that will keep residential trash the way it is or vote to outsource it to a private company. Whatever the decision, it will have a huge impact on the city's finances. The pros and cons of Measure G. Mayor Ashley Swearengen will join us a little later. But first, reducing overcrowding at California prisons is not easy. Generally, inmates must either be released or given more space, which is expensive. But there is a third option. Inmates can be sent to fire camps. That's a cornerstone of Governor Jerry Brown's plan to reduce prison overcrowding in response to a federal court order. State government reporter Katie Orr takes a closer look at what these camps entail.
It's a clear, hot day on top of Fowler Peak, about an hour east of Stockton. The views are magnificent. Mountain ranges and lakes stretch for miles. But the men here today are not focusing on the view. They're focusing on becoming firefighters.
Tool check!
Tool check!
Straight!
Straight!
Smooth!
Smooth!
Sharp!
Sharp!
Secure!
Secure!
These men are all serving their sentences in state fire camps. The camps allow low-level offenders to complete their time outside of prison walls and earn good behavior credits more quickly. But there's a catch. The inmates must train to work as hand and support crews to back up professional firefighters during wildfires. Once a year, inmates on hand crews must pass a series of qualifying tests. After checking their tools, the men on Fowler Peak get a pep talk before heading out on a timed hike.
Remember what we talked about at camp. This is your day to qualify. This is where it all counts. You own this day, right, Crew One?
Yes, sir.
The state runs 42 adult camps, including three for women, mostly in cooperation with CAL FIRE. They hold more than 4,100 inmates. Governor Jerry Brown wants to increase their ranks by 1,250. It's part of his court-ordered plan to reduce overcrowding in California prisons.
Bring them. We'd be happy to have them.
Roy Evans is the CAL FIRE division chief in charge of the Vallecito camp, an hour outside of Stockton. He says the camps could use the help, but those that come should not expect an easy ride. Evans says the days spent fighting fires can be brutal.
It starts early and ends rather late. You know, it's not uncommon for hand crews during initial attack to be on the line for 36 hours.
That doesn't faze 33-year-old inmate Daniel Palmer. He says being at the camp is hard, but it's better than the alternative.
Being incarcerated, I spend a lot of time just on a yard, just wasting time. Here we have grade projects when we don't have fires, where we can go out and do things for the community, you know, make the world a better place, while paying our debt to society.
He admits sometimes the people he's helping don't know how to react.
Some people look at you and don't know what to think about you. You know, they know that you've done some crime. They don't know what it is. So some people are a little skittish. Other people, I think, admire the fact that we're doing something with our time. We're not just sitting on a bunk eating up tax dollars, you know?
In fact, the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation says the program actually saves tax dollars, about $80 million a year. That's because crews get paid $1 an hour when they're fighting fires, just a fraction of what professional firefighters make. And when they're not on the fire lines, the crews work in the community, doing things like maintaining trails, picking up trash, and doing conservation projects. At 53, inmate Brian Meehan says the camp has been physically challenging for him, but he says the work has been satisfying and the experiences will stay with him.
I've made a few mistakes in my life, and that's why I'm here, but I believe that coming to camp has changed my attitude of the world.
At Fowler Peak, the first group of inmates has completed the hike and has moved on to the brush clearing exercise. Two men attack a dense pocket of bushes with chainsaws, while others follow behind with pickaxes and rakes, clearing a fire break. They move with speed and precision, every man knowing his exact role. It's grueling work, and after the day is done, the men will find out whether they've done it well enough to serve their sentences while also serving California during the busy fire season. At the state capitol, I'm Katie Orr.
Drivers in the Central Valley know how rough it is to be stuck in traffic on Highway 99, but a series of highway widening projects on the route may eventually alleviate congestion issues. Valley Public Radio's Ezra Romero asked a Caltrans spokeswoman, Gloria Rodriguez, about when Valley residents will notice a difference.
We're here with Gloria Rodriguez, a public information officer for Caltrans, and today we'll be talking about the future of Highway 99. Thank you, Gloria, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So what is the future of 99? I hear rumors that there's going to be some expansion and construction. What's going on?
99 faces many challenges, as we all know. The future of 99 shows projected growth, and the traffic counts are rising, and they're quickly exceeding the capacity of the 99 corridor. So to help ease this situation along this transportation backbone of the San Joaquin Valley, we're widening 99 to at least 6 lanes.
Wow. Where is construction happening?
Currently, we have 2 in Bakersfield and 2 in Tulare County, and one of those also incorporates a small portion of Fresno County, and we have 1 in the Fresno and Madera County projects along 99 right now that are in active construction.
So why now?
These operational improvements are going to basically improve the daily commute times for our commuters, reduce congestion, while also providing them with a corridor they'd be happy to drive on.
How does high-speed rail fit into this widening that is going to move over?
Well, a lot of our 99 through here in the Central Valley, like I said, it's a highly traveled corridor, and a high-speed rail is just going to be a part of that that's going to be located just to the east of 99. So as improvements are being made on 99 itself, yes, high-speed rail will be making some improvements as well, but again, it's going to be a major improvement for all the motorists here in the Central Valley.
What are some growing pains we're going to expect to go through while all this construction is going on?
Well, we're going to see possibly delays and some lane changes and probably some lanes that are going to reduce. But in the end, it's going to really pay off for the motorists.
So here in Fresno, when is the construction beginning and when is it going to end?
Well, we have the one here in Fresno, which is the San Joaquin River 99 6-lane project. It began in March of this year, and it's going to be converted from a 4-lane to a 6-lane freeway, and that one's going to be completed in 2016 here in the summer.
And then in South Valley, let's say Bakersfield and Kern County, what are we expecting down there?
Well, the Kern County projects, they began in March of this year, and they're anticipated to be completed in fall of 2014. The Tulare County project, titled the Tulare to Goshen 6-lane, it's going to begin May of this year and scheduled for completion in summer of 2015. And then we have our Goshen to Kingsburg 6-lane project, and that began in April of 2011, and it's on schedule to be completed by August of 2014. And again, as I mentioned, our Fresno County project began in March of this year and scheduled to be completed in summer of 2016. Our other district up north is District 10, and I know they have a couple of widening projects ongoing right now as well. They're doing a widening project. The project is titled State Route 99 Arboleda Drive Freeway Project. It's a $128.1 million project that's going to convert 99 from a 4-lane expressway to a 6-lane freeway within a 7-mile section. I believe it's just south of Merced. And they're also going to be constructing a new interchange at Arboleda Drive. And the other is the State Route 99 Plainsburg Road Freeway Project. And that's a $118.7 million project. Began in December of 2012. And that's going to convert 99 from a 4-lane expressway to a 6-lane freeway from Madera County Line to Buchanan Hollow Road in Merced County. And that project is scheduled to be completed in summer of 2015.
It seems like Highway 99 is going to become a major thoroughfare even more.
Yes, definitely. The annual daily traffic for Route 99, it ranges from a current level of 38,000 vehicles near Chowchilla and Madera County to over 100,000 vehicles in Bakersfield, Fresno, Modesto, and Stockton. And it's saying that in 2035, they're projecting traffic volume is going to be going from 84,000 to 258,000 vehicles.
Gloria, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Do you have anything else to say before we end?
Just basically want to remind motorists that when you see those cones out there, please slow for the cone zone. It's very important that, again, that if you see any kind of Caltrans or construction vehicles out there with their flashing lights on, to either move over if it's safe to do so or slow down.
We're here with Gloria Rodriguez, Public Information Officer for Caltrans. Thank you, Gloria.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ezra, for that interview. Well, one of the things that makes the Valley great is its rich diversity. Residents will get a taste of that with the Serbian Orthodox Church annual food festival that's coming up. And joining us now to talk about this wonderful event and just to give us a lot more information is Reverend George Gilkic. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Juanita. We're glad you're able to be here.
This is the 18th year for this event, so you all have been putting this on for quite a while.
Yes, we have. It's been a really great experience. It's always on the first Saturday of June, so that'll be this coming Saturday on the 1st.
Well, first of all, why don't you tell us a little bit about, I think people are, some might be amazed, some not, the fact that when you look at the Valley and you look at the diversity here in the culture, you're saying that what people will do is get a chance to have Serbian and Russian kind of baked goods. So the Serbian Orthodox Church is Serbian, Russian?
Right. It's actually a mixture of many different nationalities and a lot of Americans that have become Orthodox and have accepted the Orthodox Christianity. But primarily when the parish was founded in 1951, it was mainly of people from a Serbian background, from what in those at that time was known as Yugoslavia. And, today that those areas where the Serbians live over there are, you know, the country of Serbia itself, and then Montenegro and Bosnia and Herzegovina and throughout those regions. And so our festival and our food and the cultural music and things reflects all of those, you know, areas of Eastern Europe, of the Balkans. And so it's really, you know, a wonderful event, and the food is really great.
It sounds like it. And what you're saying are people are going to be able just – it's going to be like an a la carte food booths when you talk about how great the food is. And this is an opportunity for people really just to taste food from another region. I talked about, you know, where we are here. We're very lucky in the Valley because of our rich diversity. So we always get a chance to taste and try something new.
Right, right. You know, and you will. It's that area of the world was usually the crossroads between East and West. So some of the food reflects the fact that, you know, the Serbians were under the Ottoman Empire for 500 years, and parts of Serbia were under the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And so you have many, you know, different cultures and foods that sort of meld together. And what we'll present, of course, will be a reflection of both of the East and West of that part of Europe.
What do you think is so important, especially when people move and resettle in another area like we've had here in the Central Valley, the importance of really sharing the culture with other people, and not only that, maintaining it and keeping it?
You know, it allows people to be able to, experience, as you mentioned, the rich diversity that we have here in the Valley. And I think that it, for the people within at St. Peter's, it, we prepare foods that we're presenting at the festival that were handed down through generations from their grandmothers and great grandmothers. Everything is all, home cooked from the main meal that we have available, and the cost for that is $15. There's no entrance charge for the festival itself. And then the a la carte items, along with the bakery items and the pastries and things, everything that we have are all made by the people within the parish community.
And one of the other things you say you're going to be, people are going to be able to do, you're going to give tours of your church, a Byzantine-style church. Explain that to us and the fact that, and that's one of the other things that the way the church is and the fact that you've been able to kind of keep it the way it
is. Yes, you know, we have. And, the church building itself was built in 1957, and it is in a traditional Orthodox style takes us back to the time of the Byzantine Empire, since, the time of the emperor, Roman Emperor Constantine, when he established that part of the Roman Empire in the east with the city of Constantinople. And this year actually marks the 1700th anniversary from the Edict of Milan, when Christianity became legalized. And you'll see a beautiful example of what that, a reflection of what the different icons and frescoes that would have been used within Orthodox worship that is fairly unique here in the Valley. And it's something that we are very, thankful to be able to share with the people in Fresno.
Now, this event is on June 1st. It's going all day until 10 in the evening. So there's a few food, music, and dancing. So This is going to be a lively affair. When does the dancing start?
It is. it's throughout various times of the day. And then when the music's playing, you never know. Some people that are there will just get up and start dancing, and they'll dance the traditional folk dances that are common to the Balkans.
And that's something people will get to see too.
Yes, they will. They will. We have a small children's dance group that'll be performing usually every 45 minutes to an hour throughout the day.
As you mentioned, there is no fee to get in. People will just be paying for the meals.
For whatever beverages that they, wish to, purchase. That's the only cost.
Now, is this is an annual event. It's been going on for 18 years. Is it a fundraiser for the church, or is it more of a way for the church just to share and reach out to the community?
Well, it's actually both. It's the primary purpose was for us to be able to share and to reach out to the community, and at the same time to be able to raise funds for the specific capital improvements that we have within the church facilities there.
How long did those who put this event together, how long did they have to work on it? I mean, you're talking about a lot of baking and a lot of cooking.
Well,
that takes
usually
place.
The majority of it takes place probably 2 to 3 months prior.
Wow.
But the planning stages, usually when we finish this one, we go through and start planning for the next year's.
Okay. What kind of crowds have you had in the past, and what are some of the reactions you get from people, especially folks who maybe for the first time they've had the opportunity to not only come and share your food and culture and take a look at the church?
We've always had very positive comments from people that have really expressed the fact that they that they had an enjoyable time with us, that they loved the food that we offered and had available. And everyone's always saying, we look forward to next year. And so we have a lot of people that come back year after year. And so we're you know, glad that's something that, you know, people are able to come and enjoy and spend the time and the day with us and to have a good time.
Okay. This is St. Peter Serbian Orthodox Church, their annual food festival. It's going to be on Saturday, June 1st. Their church is located at 3502 North 1st Street in Fresno. Sounds like a great event and a nice opportunity just to share with other people. And Reverend George, I hope I get your name right, Glickich, right. Thank you so much for coming in today
well,
to share this
very
with
much,
us.
Juanita, and we hope that everyone will be able to join us for this.
Well, it sounds like a very great time.
It sure is.
I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition.
Support for Valley Edition comes from Kaiser Permanente Fresno.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. You're listening to Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio. This week, we introduce a new segment called Connecting California, a series featuring commentaries by noted journalist Joe Matthews from our partner organization, Zocalo Public Square. Over the coming months, you'll hear Matthews challenge conventional wisdom that California's people are a collection of competing demographic groups, that the good old days are behind us, and that our politicians are always to blame for all our problems by offering stories from all over the state. This week, Joe Matthews turns his attention to the state of education with a special commencement address to California's public high school class of 2013.
I'm sorry, James Franco. Canceled at the last minute. I'm even sorrier you got me as your substitute commencement speaker, but I was offered gas money plus a free lunch. I believe Franco planned to say that you are the future and that society has invested its hopes and resources in you. But you already know that's bull. You were a public high school student in California during the past 4 years. Roughly one in every nine of your teachers was laid off. School days got cut. California's per pupil spending fell from 46th to 48th out of the 50 states. The average high school in America now has 77% more teachers than the ones you attended. You had a curriculum so out of step it's being replaced wholesale, and the quality of your teachers is a mystery because so few of them are evaluated on their performance. Most people, when treated this shabbily, would leave, but you stayed and you succeeded. More than 80% of today's schools score above 700 on the state's academic performance index. That compares to just 31% a decade ago. More of you took harder classes, particularly in science and math, and you did better in them than your predecessors. Your dropout rate has declined, and most of you in so-called high-risk demographics graduated despite your handicaps. In short, you guys are tough, and you'll need to be, particularly if you stay in California. Jobs are hard to find. Tuition fees at our public universities are double what they were when you were in middle school. Plus, the state is giving a lot more spots to out-of-state students, who will pay much more than you. But at least you're well-prepared for this new California. For your parents and grandparents, this state was about dreams and rising. But you know better. Life here now is about struggle, about fighting for what you need, about working harder in harder times, about identifying ways to win unfair games. Finding happiness won't be about achieving the easy life, but about making your struggles as beautiful as possible. There won't be much you can count on in this California. Too much is changing. But you should count on your classmates. Yes, you'll want to go in different directions. And yes, in this world, you can change your career, your family, even your gender. But you can never change where you went to high school. So embrace your classmates even as you leave them. Keep in touch. They'll be able to help you make contacts, find jobs, and offer you perspective that you can't get anywhere else, not even from James Franco. The secret to surviving this California is to keep fighting as hard as you can together.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. This is an issue that has not only divided the city council, but the city itself. the pros and cons of Measure G. Mayor Ashley Swearingen will join us a little later. The ballot initiative will turn the city's residential trash service over to a private company. Supporters say the move will not only lower trash rates, but more importantly, pump badly needed revenue into state coffers. If voters approve the measure, Fresno will get a one-time signing bonus of $1.5 million and collect about $2.5 million in annual franchise fees. Opponents of outsourcing city trash service are putting up a hard fight, first going to court to force the issue before voters. They argue that Measure G is nothing more than an effort to privatize city services and would eventually cost city employees their jobs. Joining me now for the opposing side is Doug Vagum, former Fresno County Supervisor. Thanks so much, Mr. Vagum, for joining us today.
Thanks, Juanita. Good to be here.
Now, for those who oppose Measure G, it is a fight against privatizing city services. Opponents have called this a risky idea. What is risky, are you saying, about this?
Well, first of all, this is a full-fledged attempt to have a new source of funds coming into the city's general fund, which is, if those who don't know, is an area that the city can spend on anything it wants on any given Tuesday or Thursday. They can decide with an agenda item to spend it on anything they want. Now, the money that comes in from your and my fees for the trash goes into a reserve account that belongs to us. It's extra money that we probably paid for that was out and beyond the cost of running the service. It goes into an enterprise account and a reserve account. Those funds now will be in jeopardy of being taken to do for whatever. Another Granite Park? We don't know. They say they're going to do all these good things with them, but we just don't know. The fact that this also interrupts a service that has been around for 85 years, and the fact that it has been running for 85 years and has one of the lowest rates in anywhere in the state of California and has a reserve account, a substantial reserve account, is questionable. Why do you want to get rid of something that has that kind of track record? In the private model, in the commercial hauler, for example, those folks have already had their it's just about a year and a half, 2 years old. Their rates have already gone up. The private model is something I'm not against. I support privatization wherever and how it should be applied is based on careful study.
But, you know, many of those who do oppose Measure G, for them it is about fighting against privatizing city services.
Well, let's just look and step back a minute and look at the fact that you have 150-plus employees. You have ancillary staff that's also working in the city to support that service. But again, that service has one of the lowest rates already. Now, to go because you're running into a situation where you need a new set of cash flow, money, that you couldn't grab before because it belonged to the people for their service rendered, you want to put it into your general fund. Now you want to have the ability to tell the folks that, look, we no longer need you because after 85 years of service, we're just going to go to a private company. And if it stopped there, that would be a different story. The fact of it is it doesn't stop there. The city basically is using the private company as a quasi another government entity that cuts out the public employee.
How is that?
Well, they have if you read the contract, they have their hand around their neck and arm around their wrist to say, look, you're going to do exactly what we tell you to do. And you have to take this and you have to take that and you have to give us a certain amount of money back for every dollar that you collect. We want 15 cents. I mean, that's like a Las Vegas rake off the table kind of a thing.
But one of the other things that is argued, because when you talk about privatizing and the concern of many city employees with losing their jobs, company that will be taking over the trash service, if this is approved, says those workers will have jobs.
Yeah, I believe in the agreements that the city and the Mid Valley folks have set. And by the way, I have heard nothing but positives about Mid Valley. They're a good company. So this isn't a Mid Valley issue for me, nor is it a privatization issue for me. This is an issue that when you look at the contract and when you look at the fact that the employees themselves will be losing jobs with a guarantee of a one-year guarantee. And they have families and that type of stuff. And you're going to be – I don't care what you do when you change jobs. There's going to be trepidation. Now, if it was a really, really good deal and it wasn't going to cost a ratepayer on a potential long-term, everything we've heard from the mayor and the folks are a short-term situation, 8 years, that type of thing. We're talking 85 years worth of service here and have one of the lowest rates in the state. So they're dealing with an 8-year snapshot to say, well, look, your rates are going to be lower. And by the way, they could have lowered the rates already on the public side, 15%, which wouldn't have made this deal quite as attractive. So they held off on that for 2 and 3 years for being able to tell folks that they could lower their rates. The issue for everyone on the, let's say, the public sector side, who just want to look at this from a public sector side, is that pure trepidation of anyone sitting in a job who may lose that job eventually. And I sympathize with that, and I empathize with that. When, in fact, if the deal was such a great deal, that would have to be one of those hardships you would look at. This is such a bad deal, I think it makes it even worse for the public employee to be looking at the possibility of losing their job.
Well, one of the things that could be argued with this is one of the reasons why when you say the reason with the current the way the current trash program is set up, that the money has to go back to that service. One of the reasons I believe that they're looking at outsourcing trash is that then that money could go into the general fund. And everybody's aware, everyone that I've talked to from the unions, those who oppose, don't oppose, all agree that the city's finances are in bad shape.
Okay. Whose fault is that? Is that the garbage collector's fault? Is it the people who put their garbage in a can and roll it out to the street? Is that their fault? Essentially, this is a new tax. This is a new tax off of your garbage collection service. Is that what we're going to stand for?
Well, what would you, those who oppose Measure G, when it comes to looking at where the city is right now, everybody agrees that the finances are a mess, and you can look at who you want to blame or don't want to blame. The fact of the matter is this is where the city is right now, and something has to be done. Those who oppose Measure G, what are some of the things they would recommend?
Well, first of all, since the new administration's been in office for almost 5 years now, they've increased the debt to this city, long-term debt to this city, over $60 million, okay? Now, a garbage collector didn't do that, okay? The city administration did that. Now, why do we have a $60 million increase in the debt since 2009 when the new administration took office is because I believe they still continue to do projects that they shouldn't have been doing. Okay, they got into things that they just shouldn't be involved with.
People will also argue that a lot of what the city is facing now happened before that. A lot of obligations were made before that. A lot of projects were started before that. And a lot of this was inherited.
Well, one of the all I can tell you is when you go look at the city's own financial reports, before 2009, there were $60 million less. After 2009, it grew by $60 million up to the 2000. It was basically about February 2013. So my point is the city keeps going in and spending money. So this is a spending issue. This isn't a conservation issue. This is a spending issue, and the city wants to continue to spend. So they're going to go after whatever they can, whether it's their kids in the closet or the people who work for them, or an 85-year-old service. And I think that's fundamentally wrong when we can deliver the service actually even cheaper than we're delivering it now and better than we can now. And by the way, they've asked this company, Mid-Valley, to do services that no other company has ever done before in the Central Valley on a sustaining basis. For example, they're asking them to kick back $8.50 on every ton of trash that goes into your blue can. Heretofore, the city pays a service company who's got a lawsuit with them, by the way, Sunset Waste, who had a long-term contract with them to say, we'll take all that waste, you pay us $17.50, and we'll make sure you get every award in the book. And they have been receiving award after award for recycling the substantial amount of their trash because these private companies, and we have three private companies right now working in conjunction with our public trash haulers that make this a very cohesive conjunctive service that we will interrupt with this one hauler trying to do that.
Well, I think from the people that I've talked to, no one disagrees that the current – there's nothing wrong with the current service.
Sure.
Everyone agrees with that, that it's a good service, it's run properly, it makes money. But this becomes an issue of a city facing a financial crisis, mm-hmm. and has already gone through huge cuts in services. So when you start looking at ways to, okay, how can we solve this problem, this is one of the ways that they came up with, in the fact that they will also argue that many cities have already gone to private companies to do their trash. And with this particular proposal, you are generating revenue that can go to the general fund.
Well, are you going to use your services that are mandated for public health and safety as a tax measure? Is that what we're saying now? I want them to say that. I want to say that they want to use this as a tax measure to get this new money into the coffers. I would like to hear the mayor say that, because essentially that's what this is. And the fact that we have a service which should be the most cost efficient and least costly to the ratepayer that we possibly can make it, and turning it into a tax measure, is so fundamentally wrong. I don't even want to begin to describe what other areas this city could walk down if they get through this one. It's really a bad precedence. Now, let's speak to the 95 cities and the 90% cities, or whatever they want it to say in the California that are already on privatization. Those are small, tiny cities all the way up to some medium-sized cities. The large cities all have private haulers. I mean, all have public haulers. The bigger L.A., other cities all have public haulers. The fact of it is you could convert every community in California to a private haul. The fact that you lose your control over how much money you can maintain in your reserve account and how much money you can keep your rates down, because the hauler is going to come back to you and say, I got costs. I got costs for a truck. Even though I bought my trucks from you at pennies on the dollar, I have to replace it one day. We can go to our reserve account now and pay for those trucks.
Well, the alternative, they say, to not passing this measure, mm-hmm. will be the fact that they will have to cut more city services. And not only cut more city services, but then there will be more layoffs. So in a way, you kind of defeat the purpose, because of wanting to keep and not outsource trash and increase revenue to the city, puts the city in a position where it has to do more to – it has to cut its budget more and lay off more people.
Okay. That, of course, you're going to hear that story from them, because they want to pass the measure. That's public PR to pass Measure G. Let me tell you the opposite of that. First of all, this city has initiated needless lawsuits that have cost them millions of dollars of outside legal folks in Sacramento and San Francisco, L.A. law firms, all come in here and prey on Fresno's trough of money to be their legal masters when they file these needless lawsuits. They lose a lot of them. They settle more of them. But the fact of it is they're the ones initiating millions and millions of dollars worth of needless lawsuits. Remember that. That's their own volition that's doing that. The other areas that they could possibly do, and I firmly believe that they're missing the boat on this, is they could take a look at some master agreements with the county and the other cities working closer together on a lot of other service delivery mechanisms. They refuse to look at those. They want to be their own giant gorilla in the middle of this Fresno County. And those days are over. They've got to work conjunctively with the rest of the Valley cities.
Well, we can see this is an issue. Strong feelings on both sides. Voters will decide next Tuesday. Mr. Doug Vagum, former Fresno County Supervisor, speaking for those who oppose Measure G. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Juanita. Thanks
for joining
us.
We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition. You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Well, Fresno Mayor Ashley Swearingen has put her name and face out front in support of Measure G, saying it is good for Fresno. Residents will continue to enjoy reliable trash pickup, and at the same time, it will improve the city's bottom line. Joining me now in support of Measure G is Fresno Mayor Ashley Swearingen. Mayor, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, you know, you have staked your name and your reputation on Measure G. Have you thought about what will it do, or what will it mean if it does go down in defeat?
Well, I have staked my name and reputation on doing what I believe is right for our community at all times, not just on Measure G, but at every point along the way. Over the last 4.5 years, my filter has always been, when making decisions, what is in the best interest of our entire community. And sometimes that angers single interest organizations like labor unions, and sometimes it angers other single interest organizations, whether they be business or whatever. But at all times, my focus is, what do we do that's in the best interest of our whole city? Now, when it comes to Measure G, I am recommending passage of Measure G for 3 reasons. First of all, it's good for the ratepayer. It lowers rates by immediately 17.6%. Those rates are locked in by contract. They're capped so that they cannot exceed a certain agreed upon amount. If the private hauler receives their maximum allowable increases, and it's based on inflation, which is why we don't know at this point, but if over the next 8 years they get the maximum allowable increases, we won't see 2012 rates until the year 2020. So for people who are concerned that rates may drop initially, but they'll go up at some point, the fact of the matter is we're able to keep the rates low over the life of the contract. So I feel firmly that not only from a rate standpoint, but also from a service level standpoint, it's good for our community. We will see an increase in the recycling program. We're going to see, for the first time ever in Fresno, the ability to recycle food scraps, which we can't do in Fresno right now. You can in other major cities, but not here. That's thanks to the investment of the private hauler and the state-of-the-art facility they're building to service our customers. Secondly, I believe it is good for our community because it does provide funding to the general fund. I know Mr. Vagan brought that up as a criticism, but the reality is we have dropped so far below where we should be on police and fire services, and that's what gets paid for out of the general fund. And I know the opponents of Measure G want to say these dollars could somehow be spent on any number of wild and crazy things. The reality is 85% of our budget goes to public safety, and those expenses are locked in by contract because the majority of the expenses are personnel costs. So those are not expenses that could just all of a sudden, you know, dollars that could go somewhere else. It has to cover our public safety costs. And then lastly, if you're thinking about this from the perspective of our employees, at least we can guarantee that every employee has a job. There are about 130 employees overall who are affected by this decision. They all will receive jobs in the private sector. A lot of people I'm talking to at the door as I'm talking about Measure G don't understand. Nobody loses a job. Everybody gets a job in the private sector. And that's, frankly, much better than we can say. When I think about the 350 people who have already been laid off at City Hall and had no jobs to go to, what they tell me is, at least in this transaction, everybody gets a job in the private sector.
But I think, too, part of the concern there, if I'm not mistaken, that job is only really guaranteed for a year. After that, it's whether or not the private hauler is going to keep them.
Well, what we've seen with the transition of our commercial solid waste franchise, which a year and a half ago went to the private sector, the vast majority of those employees are still with the private haulers. We've had a few instances where people have taken jobs in other companies, and then literally, I think, 4 employees total were fired for cause. In other words, they didn't do a good job. If they don't do a good job at the city, or they don't do a good job with the private sector, they're not going to have jobs. But the vast majority of those people are still employed, even past the time that the private haulers were required to have to keep them on. So what we've heard from the private hauler is, we need good employees. We're taking over the business. We have to have good folks to help deliver this service. So they have no intention of letting go of people past that year unless they're not fulfilling their responsibilities on the job, which, of course, we can't guarantee a job at City Hall for people past a year. I mean, frankly, if Measure G doesn't pass, we will see a vast number of layoffs and people won't have jobs to go to.
I think one of the things people have really looked at, and opponents have argued again and again, is that the residential trash program as is a good one. Its recycling efforts have won awards. The department pays for itself, has made money. So when it came to looking at ways to either save or raise money for the city, why residential trash?
Well, first of all, we know that the private sector can deliver the service at a better rate. We see that with the immediate rate decrease, almost 18% with the private hauler. So we know the private sector can actually do it more efficiently. I don't think our opponents of Measure G are acknowledging that the private sector has more efficient routes. They're actually improving the recycling program beyond what the city can do, for example. So The opponents of Measure G would point to the city's successful recycling program, which the private hauler has to continue to deliver, and they're going to even add to it. So while I think everyone has been satisfied with the service we have today, that's not to say that there aren't improvements that can be made and will be made with the private hauler. And then another thing that a lot of folks don't realize is we actually have very, very onerous overtime rules at the city of Fresno. So that means that a driver, as soon as he finishes his route, which can take between 4 to 6 hours, any work he does beyond that time, he's getting paid overtime. So I had a driver come up to me at my daughter's school function a few months ago and say, gosh, I hope that privatization passes. I work 6 hours a day and I get paid for 10. So I don't think that our individual customers really understand that, in fact, there are improvements that could be made to this service, and the private hauler intends to do that.
So is this then, too, part of an effort to privatize city services, as some has argued?
Well, I think the opponents of Measure G are really grasping at straws when they say, you know, we're just worried that all government services are going to be privatized. From my perspective, you have to look at, as an organization, what are we really good at and what do we do that nobody else can do? Back in the day of the go-go 2000s when revenue was aplenty, perhaps the city could take on responsibilities that, you know, that other people could do as well, and there was money to go around. But in this day and age, we can only afford to do the things that only we are expert at. So from my perspective, public safety is really our top priority as a local government entity. There's no one else who is going to answer a 911 call or roll on a structure fire or respond to a crime in progress. That is exclusively the responsibility of the City of Fresno's Police Department and Fire Department. However, there are 12 private companies that provide residential solid waste collection in Fresno County alone. And 90% of California cities and 80% of American cities rely on private haulers to collect the solid waste. So in this day and age, when getting through the worst recession since the 1930s, when everything has to be reevaluated, from my perspective, we have to stop and say, are there things we can let go of so that we can focus on the services that only we can provide? And that's how I conclude that solid waste is a reasonable thing to allow the private hauler to do. It's not reasonable for the private sector to deliver other aspects of municipal government at all, and no one would ever make that argument. But in this case, it is a very reasonable, in fact, it is the most usual way to deliver this service. We are by far the exception by still having a government-run and government-owned garbage service. We are the exception, not the rule in California.
Well, is this about the budget? We've talked about our budget situation and the fact that this agreement will bring money into Fresno's general fund. Just how bad is our budget situation, and what are we facing? And do you think the public understands how critical it is?
I'm not sure the public does understand just how serious our financial position has gotten in the city of Fresno. I know they've heard for the last 4.5 years a lot about budget cuts, and we're down 1,200 employees. 350 of those positions were filled. A number of people have retired. We've not filled those positions as they retired. And then there were some vacant positions that we've wiped from the books, and we won't fill in any time soon, certainly not in my time in office. But I think the city, I think my administration, I think the city council has done a good job of restructuring things, trying to get by, you know, do more with less. Our city employees have certainly stepped up. We have people who are doing 2 and 3 jobs today. And I think they've done a pretty good job of continuing to deliver municipal services over the last 4.5 years. And as a result, I'm not sure sometimes the public really understands how thin we are. But we are at the point today, especially considering a complicated issue called negative fund balances, which I won't bore you with the details, but over a long period of time, the city was essentially borrowing from itself to cover its operations. Those dollars have to be paid back. Our auditor, thanks to our disclosure, our auditor has said you've got to repay those negative fund balances to the tune of $36 million. That's on top of the regular operating shortfall we're struggling with. So all of that to say, we are still in a very precarious situation. We have to do things a little bit differently. As we're evaluating what to do differently, we're mindful of service impacts. We know there will be no service impacts. In fact, there'll be service improvements with allowing the private hauler to collect the trash. And it allows us to stop hemorrhaging our public safety resources. We're down, Juanita, you know, we had 848 police officers in 2009. Today, we have 717.
And it's the fire department in Washington?
And the fire department is at 1955 staffing levels. So while I certainly believe that we had to make some cuts to those departments, there's no question. They were never pleasant, but we knew we had to downsize even law enforcement. We are at the point today, we're going any further in those service levels does not make sense. It is not good for our community.
What do you say to the people, especially those who are opposing Measure C, say, well, the city brought this on themselves just by overspending and spending too much?
Well, listen, I got a big kick out of Mr. Vagum saying that the city had increased its long-term debt by $60 million over the last 4 years. I would love to find the little teeny tiny line item that Doug Vagum is referring to and explain to him exactly what that is. Our credit rating has been downgraded 6 or 7 times in the last 4.5 years. We have not incurred any additional long-term debt, not in any general fund backed up entity. It may be the case that our utilities department, which routinely does capital projects and is separate from our general fund, has had to incur some capital expenses. But whatever he's referring to is absolutely nonsense. The opponents of Measure G say we brought this on ourselves. Well, you know what? This has been a problem that's been a long time in the making. Certainly, the recession has compounded everything. But the fact of the matter is, expenses got locked in the 2000s at all-time high levels of revenue. So when the previous administration, the previous city council, and the previous community leaders thought revenue was going to continue at a certain level for so long, they locked in contracts. Employee contracts is our most expensive thing that we have at the city of Fresno. Locked in contracts in 2007, and all of a sudden revenues start plummeting in 2009. Ever since then, we have been making cuts and downsizing our organization, and thankfully, I believe we have learned from our mistakes. Our city council has done a terrific job of passing laws, local laws, that prevent many of the past poor decisions that have been made that are contributing to this problem from happening again in the future. And just to put things in perspective, I find it curious that the opponents of Measure G and continue to bring up the Met and Granite Park and some indebtedness that was incurred in the previous administration as being the reason for this problem. The fact of the matter is 81% of our budget goes to personnel, 81%. 9% goes to debt service to pay for things like the convention center upgrade and No Neighborhood Left Behind and the Met and Granite Park, 9% compared to employee costs that are 81%. So even though I certainly think we all look back in hindsight and say, gosh, we wish we didn't do the Met. We wish we didn't do Granite Park. Those dollars are very, very small compared to our employee costs, which is really the majority of the general fund.
So with the employee cost and just what can you do about that when it comes to trying to bring that down? I know there's been much talk of trying to renegotiate contracts, but in some cases that truly hasn't been easy.
Well, so first and foremost, we've had to downsize our workforce, and we have now 1,200 fewer employees or funded positions than we had in 2009. So we had 4,200 employees in just when I started in 2009. We're down to actually about 2,900 right now. So we've downsized substantially. And then as contracts come open, we are telling our employees the things that we need back. We need to see some savings in salary. We need to deal with long-term issues like pension spiking. We need to deal with health care costs and leave balances. So we've been upfront with our employees that as their contracts come up, we're going to have to reduce the cost of those contracts by a bit.
You know, when you take a look at I want to ask one more question about Measure G, and then we're going to wrap it up. But one of the things that the opponents have in their literature and they've talked about is the fact that, you know, the city is going to be and residents are going to be locked into this contract with the private hauler and they won't have any alternatives at all during that time. So if they, you know, don't like the service or if Mid-Valley ends up raising the rates, the public has no recourse.
Right. Well, first, I would just remind people that today the public has no option whatsoever. No option. So we have a city-owned, union-controlled monopoly right now. by allowing the service to be put out to bid and allowing private competition to compete for the business, which is what happened in Mid-Valley was the successful bidder, we've injected the free market into this process. It's an 8-year, 9-month contract. Now, in the contract, there are exactly 9 different ways in which the city has an out. The opponents of Measure G like to say there is no out, there is no out. There are 9 different ways in which we have an out. Should the hauler try to raise rates beyond what is provided in the contract? Should service levels be insufficient anyway? Should this company have trouble in any manner? It's all spelled out in the contract. The contractor will be held in default. The city can seize the assets, provide the service until such time as the contract can be rebid. There are 12 private haulers in Fresno County alone that would love nothing more than to get another shot at this business for the next 8 or 9 years. So should Mid-Valley fail for any reason, which I don't believe they will, but we have thought of everything. We've got belt suspenders in this contract like you wouldn't believe. Should there be any problem, then the city can step in, continue the service, rebid the contract, and continue with the private hauler.
Okay. We're going to have to wrap it up. And thanks so much for coming in. As we said, next Tuesday, voters will make the decision. And either way, everyone has agreed it could have a huge impact on the city's finances,
Thank
their bottom
you.
Line.
Well, Juanita, I appreciate the time. And I just want to remind people that the Fresno Bee endorsed Measure G last week, which is certainly an excellent independent entity that has evaluated this deal. They've recommended it along with me, our police chief, Jerry Dyer, our fire chief, and a host of other business and community leaders.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mayor Ashley Sarangin, for joining us today. We appreciate it. Appreciate your time. Well, that is all for today's Valley Edition. You can hear audio archives and subscribe to our podcast online at kvpr.org. We welcome your comments and suggestions. You can email us at talk@kvpr.org. For audio engineer Marv Allen, production and operations manager Don Weaver, Valley Edition producer Ezra Romero, and executive producer Joe Moore, I'm Juanita Stevenson. This is Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation and the California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians, on the web at chcf.org.